Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about the importance of crafting a culture for your organization. Andy, this is a discussion that we actually began on last month's podcast, and we're going to pick it up today about the importance of identifying key behaviors that, I guess, define the culture of your organization, or in our case, a staff culture. Why is this an important conversation?
Well, you know, every organization, profit or nonprofit, has a set of behaviors that really shape the culture. And again, you can walk in any organization, be there for 3 or 4 weeks and say, hey, do you know your people always? Do you know decisions are made this way? Do you know this is how your folks respond to? And it just is. So the question is it something a leader wants to shape, or is it something a leader wants to just wake up to one day? And again, when there are no problems, this is an invisible part of culture, because we would say, well, people are just doing their job. People love their job. People are just behaving. Well, that's true. They're behaving. But when it's a problem, trying to reshape culture as it relates to inbred behavior, not an individual's behavior, but this is how the organization behaves. This is how management behaves. This is how we respond to crisis or opportunity. That's a difficult thing to reverse. So what we decided to do, and we can talk about the process in just a minute, is to try to identify those behaviors that we feel like are typical of our culture, the ones that we like, the ones we want to reinforce, and consequently the ones that we want to teach to people who are coming to the organization fresh.
So basically, Andy, you're saying that if you're a leader and you love your culture, you better find out why you love it, or you could potentially mess it up.
Oh, yeah. And I think we see this happen all the time. People don't know what the driving force is. And that's not just with culture. That's with anything in an organization. If we don't know what the driving force is, you're one dumb decision away from derailing it, dismantling it, undermining it. And then you know, 6 months down the road, you're like, what happened? And, you know, you did it to yourself. So when it comes to how the people in an organization behave when they're together, and that's what we're talking about, that shapes culture. And there are behaviors we want to reinforce, there are behaviors that we want to weed out. And so the clearer we are in terms of what they are, it's easier to reinforce those. It's also easier to point out when we feel like things are moving in a direction that we feel like is unhealthy. So it's really just identifying the things you love and reinforcing it at the behavioral level. That's what we're talking about.
Andy, you actually took our leadership team through this process, I guess, a little over a year ago.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about the process we went through.
Well, what happened is we've been in existence for 17 years. Early on, we sat down like most organizations and established what we would consider our core values. Nothing original there. And so about 2 years ago, it dawned on me, we have this fresh crop of leaders, especially at the leadership team level. We've expanded our leadership team. And I've always thought it's a little strange to ask a real leader to inherit a list of values. You know, you hand them a list and say, these are our values. You will abide by these. And you have to do that to some extent. You can't have the values discussion every 6 months. But I felt like we've got great leaders. We've got young leaders. I would like to basically reopen that can of worms, so to speak, and say, hey, if we were starting over, what would we establish as our values? And it's a little bit scary because you don't know where those conversations are going. But as we know, the process oftentimes is as important, or in some cases, more important than the product. And I know for us, the two of us, 17 years ago, week after week after week after week of talking about this stuff till we were crazy. But it really did establish some benchmarks, and it certainly established a North Star that really has guided our organization. Well, I really wanted this generation of leaders to buy in, and I just know for a leader, you can't hand them a list. They've got to be a part of the process. So we began the process over. What happened, which was a great thing, as we began rethinking values, what we began to focus on were not so much organizational values, which have not changed, so much as organizational behaviors. What are the things that, not what do we want to say to our congregations? That's pretty much established. But what do we need to say specifically to our staff and our employees about behaviors that reflect these values, but are actually deeper and more specific than a value? A value can be so general,
right?
You can make it, you know, look anyway, but a specific behavior is different. So our values discussion became a specific staff behaviors discussion around the question, what are the things that if we do these things consistently, behavior-wise, and we're going to be specific in a minute, you know, what are the things that if we continue to practice these behaviors as a staff will keep us within the guardrails of our mission, vision, our stewardship of resources and everything else? And so as you know, these things take forever. And maybe it's because I lead the discussion that it takes forever. I don't know. But it's a process to ask the questions, you know, what are the things that if we all do these things, it will get us to a good place? And again, these are not ministry oriented. These are just behavior. So that's where the discussion began and what we ended up with were really six things. And that's what we're going to talk about.
We ended up calling those six behaviors a staff covenant, which is kind of a strange term. Why do we use that word?
Well, if you'll remember, one of our big points of discussion was what do we call these things? You know, the six behaviors of, you know, that's kind of weird. And I really liked the term covenant. And the reason is it's different than a contract. A covenant sounds like more of a mutually agreed upon thing. And really what we've asked all of our staff to do, because after the leadership team wrestled this stuff to the ground and, you know, just killed ourselves trying to wordsmith it perfectly, we agree that this is something we're agreeing with each other. I'm agreeing to treat you this way. You're agreeing to treat me this way. I'm agreeing to facilitate leadership through the grid of these six behaviors, and I'm asking you to do the same thing. So it is a mutually agreed upon. It's not a top-down thing. It's a here's something we come to work, and here's how we operate. And again, it really, in some ways, defines the personality of our organization at the behavioral level. So we stuck with the word covenant. I don't think any of us loved that term. It sounded like we were getting married. Or, you know, it sounded like, you know, something out of the Old Testament. But it really is. It's a mutually agreed upon sort of a contract. But there aren't with a contract, it's a you assume the worst. You know, if you do this, I'm going to do this. Right. A covenant is really more of a positive kind of a standard to achieve rather than a behavior, you know, or a rule to keep. So that's why we stuck with that word.
I was just thinking when you said that some of our listeners may be thinking, well, we just took one small group of leaders that made decisions 17 years ago and replaced it with another small group of leaders. But actually, all of the leadership team went back to their leadership teams, and this discussion went well into the organization.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's exactly right. And that is one of the advantages. And again, this is easy for me, but I know it drives some people crazy, and I understand that. It's a bit of a personality thing. The percolation, the value of percolation, you know, if there's such a thing, it's so valuable, especially if you want buy-in. Now, if you want to just have a meeting, come up with a list of things, put it on a, you know, post it somewhere and people stare at it, you know, while they walk down the hall, that's one thing. But if you want buy-in, there has to be time, there has to be discussion. So to your point, as we discussed, then each of our leadership team members would then in their leadership meeting spend a few minutes, not hours and hours, but a few minutes saying, hey, here's the current discussion. Here's what we're thinking. Here's one of the behaviors we've stumbled upon or that we've observed. What do you think? And then your teams would bring those back. And it was a pretty informal discussion that stretched out for months. But consequently, when I eventually stood up in front of our entire staff and said, I want to talk about our staff covenant, none of this was new. Most everybody who wanted to have input had input, and we didn't incorporate every idea. You can't ever do that. But I feel like the process, even as agonizing as it was in some ways, just created more buy-in. And that was part of the goal of this entire project. So we probably need to move on to the specifics.
Well, I made a note of podcast on percolation later, but we're...
Well, our listeners are going, okay, you're killing
what
me.
What are
you're
they?
Well, welcome to our world. We'll see you next month.
That's right. Well, like I said, as you said, there are six of these. We're going to look at three this month and three next month.
Of course.
So let's just jump right in.
Okay, but before we do that, one more qualifying remark to our podcast audience. Of course, it will be tempting to hear our six words and go, oh, I like those. We'll just use those. Mm. I'll change them just a little bit in case anybody else on my team hears this podcast. They won't think I've just absolutely copied it. And so I would just say to you, none of this is original in terms of our terms, maybe our wordsmithing and the way we crafted some of these questions is. But I really, really would urge you to take the time to work through the process and not just adopt a list. Well, first of all, it just won't work. Your team will say, hey, these are good, yep, and they'll put them in a file, and then they'll just go right back to their offices, their cubes, right back out to their cars and do what they've always done. It's not going to really change anything. So, you know, you feel like, hey, we've made a step. We have some staff behaviors, but the process is as important as a product, especially for something like this. So having said all of that, we shall now begin.
Okay, back to the list. I thought we'd start with the one that we sort of focused on last month, so we won't spend as much time on that one. But that behavior is what we call make it better.
That's right. Make it better. We want every single person in the organization to come to work looking for a way to make it better. And it can be whatever it is they're working on. It can be the organization in general. It is, we want feedback loops that get new information from every area of the organization to feed back into a place where people who can make decisions can make it better. So it's basically saying whatever you see is fair game. Any idea, anything that can be improved, no matter how new you are to the organization. In fact, the newer you are, the fresher your eyes.
Right.
So consequently, you're going to see things those of us who've been here forever haven't seen, and we've talked about that before. So we're giving everybody permission. In fact, we're asking everybody to participate in making everything better. So, you know, you can see that that's a value, but by making it a behavior, it just kind of ups the energy a little bit as it relates to, again, giving people permission to ask those pesky questions and to make those pesky observations and, again, to look for continuous improvement. And again, every great organization is all about continuous improvement. That's nothing new. But again, the statement, make it better, is more powerful and has more energy than we're committed to continuous improvement.
Right.
So that was one of the things that took us from a value list to a behavior list.
Can you give an example of this?
Yeah, well, as you would expect, you know, all of our examples would be ministry-oriented or church-oriented. But one in particular that I just thought was a fantastic thing. We have a gigantic ministry with middle schoolers in our community and high school as well, but middle school has just blown up around here. And most of our podcast listeners, you've been to some sort of camp where they had a campfire and, you know, everybody gathered around the campfire and stared at the fire while somebody gave a devotional or a pep talk or a call your mom or, you know, there's that moment at camp. So our middle school director, you know, we've seen the value of that. But at a certain point, you just can't get everybody around the campfire. And the more kids you put around a campfire, the more chaos there is. But there's something special about that moment. So our team, you know, was tempted to just abandon that campfire moment because there's really hundreds and hundreds of middle schoolers at all of these camps. And then that we thought about two bonfires or three. So what they decided to do was capture the essence of the moment, which is that sort of intimacy that can happen around a campfire. So they got permission to build 72 campfires at our middle school events. So when I heard this, I thought, you know, that's a whole lot of work. It would have been so much easier to say, let's abandon that. But again, just this continuous quest of, okay, we have a moment. We don't want to lose the value of the moment. What can we do? 72 miniature campfires, which allowed the small groups to gather around each of their fires with a leader. Now, for somebody who doesn't work in our, you know, church industry, it's like, what? But again, it was just an example of let's make it better. The other sort of broad one was years ago, you know, one of my personal goals is I want to get better and better and better at communication. That's a written goal that I look at every day in my closet with my four or five goals. I'm not really a great goal setter. And so I'm constantly looking for ways to just get better personally. And so I didn't like the idea of looking down at notes or even looking down at my Bible and pointing to a screen. So I wanted to have something on stage with me. So I decided to use a flip chart. Well, you know, our service programming division is like, flip chart? You know, how old are you? I'm like, no, but that way I can point to it and I can write on it. You know, I was thinking I'm kind of up in the communication skill level here. Well, they came back and said, no, let's experiment with a plasma screen that you can be interactive with. So again, I feel like the addition of speaking with the screen, for people who have watched me preach, now it's such an integral part of what we do. All of our communicators do it. But again, it was just a team of people who didn't feel like, no, that's Andy's deal. If he wants a flip chart, get him a flip chart. He's in charge. It was a group of people who said, no, we can make that better. Andy, we can make you better. And then it took me saying, okay, I'll let you try to help me be better at something that I know I'm better than you at. But again, it becomes part of the culture and it's, you know, everybody has permission to try to make everything and everybody else better. And there's a tension in that, but the organization wins and ultimately, you know, every employee wins as well.
Andy, for each of these, we added a question to really challenge us in the behavior. For Make It Better, we asked, what am I doing to help us improve organizationally?
Yeah, and adding a question to a value, again, makes it personal, brings energy. And so, again, make it better, that's good. But for every single person to ask, what am I doing, not we, what am I doing to help us, we, improve organizationally? That's very personal. I know the answer to that. Either I'm doing nothing to help us improve because I'm doing the same thing I've always done the same way I've always done it,
right,
or I'm doing something to help us improve organizationally. So the question, again, I think just energizes the behavior. And again, it's an easy question to ask and answer.
Andy, the next behavior on our list is take it personally.
Yep. We just think if the day ever came when our staff's involvement ended with their job description, that our culture would suffer significantly. The day that at any level in this organization, it's just, well, I have a job, I did my job, I went home, and there wasn't personal investment. Now, again, we're a church, so it's a little bit different. But for a, you know, a company that manufactures a product, you would hope that your employees would use that product, you know, if possible.
Right.
Well, this is just our way of saying we want you to believe in the product so much that you are personally involved. We want you to be personally involved. So in our world, what that looks like is a person who, you know, has a job in, you know, area A may volunteer in area C as a demonstration of the fact that, hey, this is personal for me. We don't want people to simply talk about the importance of being in small groups. We want our staff to actually buy in and be in a small group.
Right.
So again, it's just taking things beyond job description so there's personal investment and involvement with a mission and strategy. And where this helps us is up front in the hiring process to lay that expectation out front. Say, hey, you know, you're going to have a job description. We're hiring you because you're a great individual. We would hope, and actually we're going to expect, in fact, you're going to work around a bunch of people who take this really seriously and it's personal for them. And generally in the interview process, we can discover if they have, you know, there's already buy-in in terms of what we're doing, mission and vision, because it is personal. And in our case, a person who works in our organization, when they're in the community, and this is true of many organizations, you're a representative of our organization, and there are behaviors that would reflect poorly. But for a person who has really taken it personal, those kind of things take care of themselves.
And all of that really goes to the question we attached, which is, how am I personally engaged in our mission and vision?
Yeah. And again, there's a question every single employee knows the answer to.
Right.
How am I, you know, well, I'm not, or here's how I am,
exactly,
or I used to be, or, hey, I just went through a life change and I need to re-engage or rethink how I'm personally involved. But again, the question, you know, brings extraordinary clarity. How am I personally engaged in our mission and vision?
And the third behavior and the final one for this podcast is collaborate.
Yeah, this is something that has been really in some ways a hallmark of our organization from the beginning. And the reason we included this is we just don't want to lose this. We think there, again, any organization where there's actual collaboration, you benefit. I mean, the whole idea of synergy, when you've experienced synergy, you just think, wow, I never want to go anywhere else. I never want to work in an organization where there is not the willingness on everybody's part to loan themselves to the different people, departments, divisions in the organization. So this is something we've talked about on our podcast before. We begin our meetings by giving people an opportunity to thank other departments and divisions for helping them with a specific project. And so we just want there to be a value that says, I'm not too proud to ask for help, and I'm not too busy to be of help. I'm not too proud to say, you know what, I really need your expertise. Could I borrow your brain? Could I borrow some time? And at the same time, I want to work at a sustainable pace and have my department at a sustainable pace. So when there's an all-hands-on-deck event or an all-hands-on-deck crisis, I can send my team and say, hey, we're going to go over there and help them get this job done. So again, it tears down the silos. There's far less turf war. There's just, you know, it covers a multitude of organizational evils if there really is a commitment to collaboration.
The question that we attach to collaborate is, where am I leveraging the talent and skills of those outside my primary team?
Yeah, and this was a question we really wrestled with, because collaboration is both ways. I have to be willing to lend myself to you, and then I have to be willing to ask you to lend yourself to me. So I mean, the whole point of collaboration is it's two ways. So where am I leveraging in the organization the talent and skills of those outside my primary team? Have I been willing to reach outside, you know, my division, department,
right,
you know, campus, whatever, to leverage other people's skills? And I know the answer to that. Either I am or I'm not. Either I did some time ago and it's time to consider that again, or I can't even in recent memory remember leveraging that.
Yeah.
So again, I know if I've allowed my staff to collaborate or invited collaboration. So the question, again, just, you know, brings extraordinary clarity. And that's, again, the value of these questions.
Landy, as we wrap up the podcast this month, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I would just, again, remind our podcast listeners, as you listen to these things, I know because you're leaders, this is all being filtered through your organization. You're going, oh, yeah, we need to do that, and yeah, we need more of that. But again, the process is everything. To sit down with your core team, even if you just have a small team that's a, you know, part of a larger organization, to help your team identify the behaviors that you think reinforce what you want to have happen. Spend some time identifying those, and then the questions are so powerful. So, you know, feel free to use ours, edit ours, change ours, improve ours. We don't care. But again, the process is so important. And the next month, we'll come back and talk about these other three behaviors. But my hunch is that most of you will have already gone through this exercise by next month. And you'll listen to our behaviors and think, you know, those are kind of lame. But anyway, but again, we hope that today will just encourage you to think about the process necessary, again, to identify the behaviors that will make your organization the great organization that we know you want it to be.
Andy, thanks for taking the time with us today, and thanks to our audience for listening. To hear more Leadership Podcast content, check out the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast Collection USB resource that includes all 12 of the monthly podcast MP3s from 2011 or 2012, plus a bonus feature leadership video. Visit andystanley.com to learn more.